This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, this is the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our call, some interesting topics to talk over?
A high-tech device that may jog your memory, useful not only for kids that may want to jog their memory, but for Alzheimer's disease patients and for their loved ones. Mm. We'll talk about it.
And?
Taxing soda. Should we do it? And by taxing soda, will we reduce obesity? Interesting data. Guess who's against it?
I can guess, but we'll find out for sure coming up. And a recipe.
Alana's chicken noodle soup. I love chicken noodle soup. Love it, love it, love it. Fun recipe. Great. You will love it too.
This one from guest chef Alana Seaton in Knoxville, Tennessee. That's coming up. Oh, and our medical myth buster later on in the hour. 800-462-7413. It's toll free. And Zorba, here's a Madison, Wisconsin listener with us now. Hi.
Guys, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, about 6 months ago, I tripped over a doorway threshold and torqued the toes on my foot.
Ouch.
When I turned around and saw that I had literally like flown out of my shoes and the left shoe was pointing the opposite way, I figured I was going to have some problems.
Ooh.
But it was 6 months ago and it still hurts, so I'm not quite sure what to do.
Now, this is a little more extreme than a stubbed toe, isn't it?
Yeah.
So wait a second. Let me get this straight. You torqued it out. What were you doing? Was this during a soccer game or something? Playing football with other people? Let me guess. A wrestling match you were doing it? Or, I mean, tell me, how'd you do it?
Well, it wasn't quite that glamorous. I was carrying a couple bags of groceries into my house.
Okay.
And I just had the groceries in my hand and came through the door, tripped on the threshold, and everything, including me, went flying.
Gosh, oh, that's...
Yeah.
I can picture that. Mm-hmm. I can definitely
The old groceries
that.
On the
that's
threshold.
Right, that's right. Routine. Yeah, yeah. There used to be a comedy routine. That's right. You got the same thing. Yeah, I know. When those things happen, they just kind of happen all of a sudden. So you never went to the doctor or anything, correct?
No.
Okay. What have you done for it?
Well, not a whole lot. I mean, it hurt for a couple weeks, and I just figured, you know, I probably just strained something.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
But consequently, I haven't been able to walk as much, you know, like exercise without it hurting. And the strength in the foot hasn't come back, and so I've tripped a couple times, slipped a couple times because I can't, like, put full weight on it as much as I used to be able to. And so I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Wow, that's not good. That is not good stuff for sure. I've got a couple suggestions. First of all, one of the things that you can do in terms of trying to get rid of the pain is taping the toes together. They're called buddy splint. So, for instance, if it's your second toe or your third toe, you tape them together. You put a little piece of cotton in between, and you get white, you know, Red Cross tape or white tape, which you buy at the, you know, at the drugstore, and you tape them together and you leave them taped. And you tape two together. So I would tape two and three, and I would probably tape four and five, or I would tape two, three, and four together with a strap, and I would do that for 2 to 3 weeks. The other thing I would do is I would take two over-the-counter naproxen twice a day to reduce inflammation.
Well, is this ever going to get better?
Believe it or not, the body actually heals. Shocking as it is, the body will often heal, and that's what I would do. And you're probably just pushing on either the ligaments or the tendons that you've been overusing, and what you do is you have to put them at rest. Well, one way is to get on crutches. You're not going to be on crutches for a month.
Yeah, so if she went to see a doctor, the doctor would tell her pretty much what you did.
Well,
I mean, there's not much else.
She came to see me.
Yeah.
Then I would tell
her
the
same thing.
But I'm just
saying, there's no other medical fix than taping your toes together.
No, no. That's usually what we do. Sometimes, actually, we put people in a shoe, a special shoe, and sometimes we put them in a splint. So we put them in a lower leg walking cast. They're no longer cast, but they're actually made out of fabric, mm-hmm. so that people actually don't use their toes at all, and they're basically walking on their heel and their forefoot. But when you push off with your foot, that's often when you're essentially stressing those toes. I would tape them first. first and see what happens. And again, a shoe with a hard sole.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Yep.
Good luck with it, and thanks so much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Derby, Kansas. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine, what's up?
I am one of those people who is allergic to Wellbutrin. Now, I took it to quit smoking several years ago, and the good thing is it worked. The bad thing is, as soon as it started working, I broke out in hives from head to toe. Now, my question is, I would like to get on Chantix to, you know, reverse smoking now. And I'm a little concerned on whether that has some of the same fillers or, you know, drugs in it that would cause me to break out in hives again or have an allergic reaction. But then the other concern is I'm also on Lexapro for just a mild anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little concerned, you know, what I can do. Will I have to get off the Lexapro and those sorts of things?
Sure. Let's first of all talk about hives and drugs. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. First of all, people have allergic reactions to drugs, and they can get hives from the drugs, and then they're allergic. But people also get hives for a whole bunch of reasons. Mm-hmm. They get hives from viruses. There's something called cold weather hives, something called idiopathic hives, where we don't really know what they come from, allergies. So a lot of people who get hives on a drug don't actually have an allergy to the drug. In other words, they just coincidentally got hives. Mm-hmm. Wellbutrin rarely causes an allergic reaction. It's almost very, very rarely. I've never seen it myself, and I prescribe a lot of it.
So 5%.
Yeah. Well, but it's probably even less than that. It's because of this coincidental issue. So I mention it only because even because you had hives from Wellbutrin doesn't mean you'd get hives the next time you took it. I'm not necessarily recommending you take it again. Don't get me wrong.
There's two instances, though.
But, well, you see, so you had the second instance. If it occurs the second time, that was a good doctor to re-challenge you. If it occurs the second time, then for sure, then you can say, yeah, it's from the drug.
Right.
So you were re-challenged. The Wellbutrin did it again. The answer was right. Then you're allergic to it. Chantix, totally different category. No relationship at all. So, I mean, it's like, you know, the difference between an apple and a piece of beef. I mean, it's totally different. These are not apples and oranges. You're just in a totally different class. I want to get back. You stopped on the Wellbutrin. Is that what happened? And then why'd you?
Yes.
And what
yes,
happened?
The day, I mean, literally, we were at a car show. My wife asked me if I'd like to go have a cigarette, and I just had no desire. It wasn't me saying this, really. It was just, I really didn't feel like getting up to go outside to have a cigarette, and it worked completely.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And it was like a cloud was lifted off of me. Uh-huh. I don't know how to explain it, but it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that evening I broke out head to toe, literally everywhere. My lips swole up, everything, you know, just hives.
And then when did you start smoking again?
I think about a month or so after that.
Your wife smokes?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. How'd she quit?
She was pregnant, so she had the willpower to quit because obviously we don't, you know, want her to be smoking while we were pregnant. And now she's pregnant again, and she's trying to keep that going. And I don't want my children to see this is what you do when you become an adult.
Good, important issue. The way to quit is to use the quitting aids as you can. Chantix is a great medication tolerated by probably 85 to 90% of the people. I'd go on the Chantix, stay on it for 3 months, then you quit. Then you're on your own. But it helps you quit. You probably have a really good chance. You're motivated. Your wife is motivated too. Your children are less likely to smoke if you don't smoke. So go for it and manipulate the social issue. I'm doing it for my wife. I'm doing it for my kids, along with the Chantix. And you will be successful. Go for it.
Okay. And what about the Lexapro? Is he going to have to stop that?
No.
Or is that something
Lexapro,
that can be taken in?
You can keep them together. Stay in the Lexapro. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Good.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks.
You're welcome, and good luck for you. You can do it.
1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, what's this little black box that will help me remember?
Yeah, right. It's a camera, little camera. So it's a camera with a recorder. Mm-hmm. So picture this. You've got a pendant on, a brooch or a pendant around your neck, and it's a camera and a recorder, and it records what you're doing.
It automatically takes
pictures. You can set them up to take pictures once every 5 minutes, once a minute, once every 10 minutes, because they've got quite a bit of memory.
But if I'm talking to you with that little black thing on, I might not like this that you're taking
well, yeah,
picture
yeah. And it might
over.
Be pretty dumb. But for people, and what happens is they initially are marketing this for kids who want to sort of keep track of everything that they're doing, and they put it up on Facebook or MySpace on their website and do it. But,
yeah.
But think about it for people with Alzheimer's disease, people who are in their home and they might have mild Alzheimer's disease, and they might you might be able to actually monitor for a loved one what's actually going on. So you might find they're going back and forth in and out of the kitchen, in and out of the kitchen. And the concept is maybe if you show people this mm-hmm. on a computer screen, hey, you're going back and forth in the kitchen, they'll begin to realize they're doing the same repetitive behavior because of a lack of memory.
So you could, when you visit the Alzheimer's loved one in the evening, you could look at this little black box and you could say, oh, you did this and you did that.
Correct.
Look at this.
And this is
look
a mild.
This.
This
here's
is,
what you
this
did.
This is
oh,
a mild yeah. Alzheimer's. Yeah. Yeah, but I have to tell you, my mom had Alzheimer's disease. She died many years ago in 1981. My dad wondered what was going on. He shut off the stove. They only used a microwave so she wouldn't be dangerous. In the mild stages before she really developed dementia, he wondered what she did when he went to work. And he didn't know what she did. And he didn't know if she sat in front of the TV and just watched TV all day or what she did. She didn't wander around the house. Mm-hmm. This was in the safe part when she began to know that her memory was beginning to fail before it failed completely and she needed custodial care. This might be a useful way to give feedback. In other words, can you teach people with Alzheimer's things about their repetitive behavior? Or is this a way of monitoring those people so you can see whether or not they're safe at home? In other words, maybe you're no longer safe.
Yeah.
I thought you were safe at home, but now I'm monitoring you. And the fact is you're not safe because you're worried about things.
Yeah.
I think using this technology is a great way to help determine essentially what's happening in an Alzheimer person's
and
life.
And for the kids, they don't spend enough time already on the computer with their...
No, this will encourage kids to spend more time on Facebook.
Yeah, that's really good.
Which, of course, is great.
That's a really good
thing. Which is great. They should stop playing outside and doing motor muscle activity and begin sitting in front of the computer. And while they're at it, they might as well light up and smoke.
800-462-7413. And to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, we go. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. How can we help you?
Every morning, well, I would say most mornings when I wake up, my face feels really puffy, like it's kind of swollen, almost like I'm wearing a mask or something. It's not painful, but it's kind of just uncomfortable. Some days it's worse than others, and which leads me to believe that it's possibly preventable or it's something that I'm doing. I don't know if it's a food allergy or if I'm sleeping wrong, but I don't know what it is.
So it happens how often?
Most mornings.
Most mornings?
Yeah.
So most mornings you get up and your face is puffy, and when does the puffiness go away?
It normally takes an hour or two to go down.
Uh-huh. What's your diet like?
It's fairly healthy.
Okay, so fairly healthy is good. Alcohol, how much do you drink?
I mean, I drink socially, not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to kind of check to see, like, if I drank alcohol that night, wake up in the morning, see if my face was puffier
good,
than normal.
Good, because that's part of an issue. So have you noticed that?
Not really.
Okay. Medicines? Are you on any medicines at all? Birth control pills?
Nope.
Okay. So not on any medications because hormones will cause your face to be puffy and the hands can be puffy and a number of other medications can also do that. The final thing is, do you sleep? How do you sleep? On your back, on your side, on your front?
I move around normally kind of back to side, but usually end up sleeping on my back.
Okay, because sometimes when people actually, sort of sleep facing down, they'll get puffier when they sleep facing down and they'll do it. So you have stumped the doctor.
Oh.
You have stumped the doctor. You have you have succeeded. Ring the bell and Tom will send you a check. What is it, for $100? Tom?
Not
really. This is public radio. We only give you the thought of $100. But you've stumped me. The things that often cause puffiness are drugs and medications, too much salt in the diet, you can still get rid of salt in your diet and see if that does it. And what I would do is rigorously just have no salt at all for a week or two and see if that goes away. That's because that you can manipulate. I'd stop salt. I'd stop all alcohol, and I would stop it for 2 weeks and see what happens. I don't think anything will come of it, but then you'll know whether or not salt or alcohol are the issue, because those are the only things that are sort of outstanding. You sleep the right way. Sometimes when people elevate the head of their bed, they can actually get rid of all these sort of puffiness. Sometimes when they add pillows, so they have more pillows around them, they're not just in one place on the bed, mm-hmm. because once again, if it's face down, you'll do it. But frankly, you stumped the doctor. So congratulations. Congratulations. But I've given you some tips, even though I'm stumped. I can always give tips.
What about this, that when you get up in the morning, you're a little foggy and you look in the mirror and your face seems puffier to you.
Yes.
And then after you're awake for a while, then you get a clearer picture of yourself.
That's exactly it. I like it, Tom. Is that why we turn on the shower to be able to put fog in the mirror so we can't see ourselves in the morning?
Yes, that's true. Maybe I should check my vision or just wait to look in the app.
Wait in the mirror for a couple hours. Maybe it's your mirror. Tom brought up a good point. Maybe the problem is your mirror and you're not really puffy.
I don't know. I've seen some people early in the morning and they're like, oh, what happened to you?
Then it's not the mirror. So. Well, thank you for your call.
Well, thank you for your time.
Yep. 800-462-7413, you know. Let's check in on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now, Zorba, and see if we can help out a new mother. This question comes to us from Connie in Minnesota. She writes, I am a breastfeeding mother, and I wonder if I can take immune-boosting supplements. In particular, I'm wondering about the safety of IP6. Myotake, you'll correct me on that, and cat's claw, all found in a product called Max3 from Enzymatic Therapy.
Uh-huh. Good question. Now, keep in mind, supplements are regulated like cosmetics. They can claim whatever they want. They can't claim to cure a disease, but they can claim to give you more energy and make you feel better. 20% of the supplements, according to Consumer Reports, do not have much in them. In other words, they'll say it has cat's claw, but if you analyze it for cat's claw, there is no cat's claw at all. See, the other issue with supplements is they are tainted. There are many supplements that have the wrong stuff in it. Example, red yeast. That was a supplement that, quote, lowered cholesterol. It did. Because it was tainted with Mevacor, the drug made by Merck to lower cholesterol. So it was a fake supplement. It wasn't the red yeast that did it. It was the drug they put in it. My recommendation is, unless a supplement is in consumerreports.org, I love their supplements. I love what they look at. Unless they recommend a supplement, don't take it. And the reason is you don't know what you're getting. And you know what you're getting? A pig in a poke.
Mm-hmm. Well, supplement your health knowledge by sending us your questions to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And if you know what a pig in a poke is, send me that information too.
Our recipe coming up. After that, more of your calls, and we have our medical mythbuster too. All right here where you are on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That phone number is 800-462-7413, and we'll be getting back to the phones after our recipe, which is coming up right now as we welcome our guest chef, Alana Seaton from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi, Alana.
Hi, Tom.
The recipe is for Alana's chicken noodle soup, and Alana, I see here looking at the sheet, I don't know, 20 ingredients?
The long title is Alana's Feel Good Chicken Noodle Soup.
Oh, so you gotta have all of this other stuff makes it feel good.
Makes it feel good. I mean, you know, I look at the ingredients, and the first thing I see is spice.
Yes.
You like to spice it up, so.
Yes.
Now, so originally you're from New Orleans, and
well, actually, I grew up in Hawaii, but I started this recipe while I was living in New Orleans. I moved there for graduate school, and it was the first time living on my own. And actually, when my then fiance and now husband and I got our own apartment, I started experimenting. And if you've been to New Orleans, everything there is full of flavor, and we call it kicked up a notch. Everything gets a little bit more spice, and there's also another word, lagniappe, a little something extra. So I just kept adding a little something extra and a little something extra.
So lagniappe, where does that word come? I've never heard of that. Lagniappe means a little something extra?
Yeah, lagniappe, I believe it's a Creole, a French Cajun influence word, and it means a little something extra. So everything in New Orleans is cooked with
But it is true. It is true. When I go to New Orleans for meetings or conferences, the food is spectacular.
It's phenomenal.
The food is spectacular. It's the exact opposite of bland middle of Wisconsin food, where it's like, what is this? It's beige, and I can't taste it. You know, that's about what it is. And chicken noodle soup. The thing about chicken noodle soup for many of us is it sort of defines comfort food.
Absolutely.
You know, now that I know that this is chicken soup with lagniappe, or lagniappe up.
So this is only an hour show, and we have a whole lot of ingredients.
Oh, yeah, but we'll make it, Tom.
We better get to it.
We'll make it. We will make it. So, okay, so let's start out with 4 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil. And that'll be the first thing. Then 2 pounds of chicken cube. What kind of chicken do you use?
I prefer to use boneless, skinless thighs, partly because that's what I can afford most of the time. But I also have found that it has more flavor. I've tried cooking it with chicken breasts, and I find the chicken thighs actually have a little bit more chicken flavor.
Oh,
so
they do. They do.
That's what I prefer. Yeah.
Because thighs are dark meat, and dark meat contains more fat, and fat actually contains more flavor. And although it adds some fat to the recipe, it's a soup, so, I mean, there's not too much fat in this recipe at all. And I agree with you. Chicken thighs have much more flavor than boneless, skinless chicken breast. We're going to use onion powder, garlic powder, and black pepper. We're going to do that in our spice to taste. So what do you mean to taste? How much do you use?
I usually just kind of sprinkle the chicken. I can also put some of that cayenne pepper that'll be coming up.
A tablespoonful of cayenne.
Yeah, just a little bit, just to get it kind of simmering. And as a favorite chef of mine says, happy.
Happy.
Get the chicken nice and happy.
So it's lagniappe and happy. I've learned a couple of. Now that sounds like that's Hawaiian when we say happy. So it's a large onion peeled and chopped. Nice, a coarse chopped onion, I assume.
I prefer red onion, but you can use yellow or white. I just like red onion. Everything with color. That's when I started making this soup. I was really into looking at, okay, well, now that I can cook on my own, what do I add? And I read somewhere that you cook a rainbow, so colors, red,
I
green,
love it.
Yellow,
yeah,
orange.
My mouth is watering already.
I love it. That's right. I love it. I'm going to start to use red onion with all my soups. 6 cloves of garlic peeled and diced.
Yes.
Okay, 1 head of celery washed and sliced. So you slice a head of celery.
Yes, and I slice all the vegetables. I tend to slice diagonally. That, I guess, is just for aesthetic, but I think when I get all those nice little sliced diagonally carrots and celery in the soup, it makes me feel good. That's the other thing I was experimenting with is presentation. I always just kind of chopped things and not paid attention to what I was doing and thought, well, I'll just slice them, and it makes me feel good to know that a little extra care gone into the chopping of the vegetables.
So I think it's great. I think presentation does make a difference. You know, all you have to do is go to Japan and see the presentation makes a difference. Yeah. Or go to a fancy restaurant and when they bring it out, you know, and you're paying big bucks, it's presented. And that's a part of an issue at home, too. Pound of carrots, clean, peeled, and sliced.
Sliced diagonally again. However, if you want to make them curly, you can make them curly.
In other words, but it adds to the presentation. A bell pepper, seeded and diced. Nice. Yes. Red bell pepper. 1/2 cup of mushrooms cleaned and sliced. Okay, so 20 cups of chicken broth. So that's 20 cups of chicken broth.
Yes. I tend to use water and bouillon cubes because I can adjust the chicken and salt myself. So if you have fresh chicken broth, you can use that. If you have a particular brand you like, that's great. I tend to just use water and bouillon cubes. My daughter can help me unpeel the bouillon cubes and put them in, so that's my other motivation for making it lately is that my daughter can help me with some of these steps, too.
Well, I must tell you, my kids love to cook, and they love to cook because I cooked with them. I happen to love cooking, and I cooked with them when they were young, so keep that up. 1.5 cups of noodles. We'll talk about what kind of noodles. You like the no-yolk noodles, but any noodle would be fine.
Yes, any noodle will be fine. I tend to find the no-yolk, the extra broad egg noodles tend to not disintegrate as much.
Good
point. I made it with some other mm-hmm. types of noodles, and they just kind of makes the whole thing mushy. And yeah. I find those egg noodles hold together a little bit more because they'll soak up all the broth and the juices.
Mm-hmm.
So they hold up a lot better, I find.
Very good point. Fresh lime juice, fresh lemon juice. You like that? I can already.
Yes,
my mouth
I do.
Is watering.
I had tried just using some of the the juiced lemon, but it does not come out the same unless you use a freshly squeezed lemon, freshly squeezed lime. That you can adjust. Sometimes I put two limes. Sometimes I put two lemons. Sometimes mm-hmm. I just put one of each.
Yeah, it all depends on how it feels. Quarter of a cup of apple cider vinegar. That's
yes.
That's a significant amount of apple cider vinegar. That gives that
yes.
nice vinegary taste to it.
Yeah, that's the key. The lemon and lime juice and the apple cider vinegar are what gives this its full out flavor. Mm,
it's full out flavor. And then parsley, 1/8 cup. So you take a bunch of parsley and put
yeah.
it in there. Yeah.
yeah.
Some white pepper. I love it. We have cayenne pepper and black pepper and mm-hmm. white pepper. We've got all the peppers and salt to taste. Always important at the end. Let's make it.
Yeah. Before that, I just am curious. How many will this? This is a lot of. A lot of soup, Alana. How many?
It is. This is a big pot of soup. I usually make. I actually had made it last week, and I gave a bunch to a friend of mine that was sick. I gave a bunch to my next door neighbor, and we've had at least 3 or 4 meals from
yeah.
it.
That's
so
the way.
It's a lot of soup. Lot of, as I think I put in my email, it's a big old pot of lovin'.
That is the way. That is the way to do it. So let's make it. I'm going to go through this now. In a large pot over medium heat, heat the olive oil, making sure to fully coat the bottom of the pot with the oil. Sometimes I'll spray some Pam in the bottom, too.
Mm-hmm.
Lightly season the cubed chicken with the onion powder, garlic powder, black pepper, a couple of pinches of cayenne. Add the chicken to the pot. Cook until it's thoroughly brown. So basically, the chicken is going to be sautéed in that, and that's going to lock
exactly.
in the flavor.
Exactly.
Lock in that flavor, which is great. Then add the onions and garlic and cook until they're just translucent again over the medium heat. I take it that's probably mm-hmm. for another few minutes. And then add the rest of the chopped vegetables. Stir and cook about 3 minutes. So again, you're cooking these vegetables before you're actually putting the water in. Very
yes.
important. Locks in that flavor.
Exactly.
Then add the chicken broth or the water with the bouillon cubes. Bring it to a boil. If you're using thighs, you're going to have to skim that little fat off the top that you
yes.
said. Boil it for 5 minutes. Then add the uncooked noodles after things have of course, the flavors have sort of melded together. Bring it to a boil. Lower the heat and simmer for 10 minutes, stirring occasionally, and then at the end, add the lime juice, lemon juice, apple cider vinegar, remaining cayenne pepper, white pepper, parsley, adjust the salt, cook for 5 or 10 more minutes until the veggies are desired doneness, and dig in. It sounds
yes.
luscious.
Sounds delicious.
And I will say that I do prefer to use Hawaiian rock salt.
Oh.
But mm-hmm. you could also use sea salt or whatever salt you like, but I prefer Hawaiian rock salt, partially because I have a plethora of it with the care packages my family sends, but I also find it gives the food I cook with a little bit more, pardon the pun, earthy flavor
uh-huh.
because it has a lot of the Hawaiian oxidized
Ooh.
Dirt in it from the sea uh-huh. salt beds. So that's what I prefer to use in my soup.
Alana, I like to motorcycle down to Memphis every now and then for ribs. Can I swing over to Knoxville first and get some of that soup from you?
I would love to have you over, Tom. Come over anytime.
Thanks
Thank
so
you
much.
So much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
And for sending us this winning recipe, and indeed it was a winning recipe. Alana gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
zorbapastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's zorbapastor.org.
1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Callers waiting and a line open for you. Our next caller, Zorba, is in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I'm calling because my boyfriend drinks a lot of Gatorade. He's one of those people who doesn't like water, just plain old water, as I do. And he drinks it at work, and then at my house, he brings over these giant tubs of Gatorade powder, and he makes it for himself in giant 64-ounce containers. And I noticed there were a couple of studies that came out. One was about your teeth and sports drinks and the effect on the enamel on your teeth. And then recently there was another study about the effect of soda and a link with pancreatic cancer. So I was just worried about those couple of things and wondering if Zorba had any insights.
I'm trying to get my head around a 64-ounce thing of Gatorade. Is it a thing that you tip up and drink out of a small opening?
You know what it is? It's a Gatorade bong. Instead of a beer bong, it's a Gatorade bong. You know, way to go, man. We've now got Gatorade bongs. Get rid of the alcohol. It's just Gatorade. By the way, if this is regular Gatorade, you realize if he drinks 64 ounces, he's getting 64 teaspoons of sugar.
Yeah,
1,000 calories.
I did look on the label, and it seems that he's making it on the light side because they recommend a scoop for every 32 ounces, and he uses a scoop for all 64.
Oh, wow.
It's
so excited he's only getting. Is he overweight, by the way?
Since he got his desk job, he has gained about 10 pounds, but in general, he's pretty fit. He's not really overweight.
Okay. Let's talk about drinks. First of all, there are some issues about high fructose corn syrup drinks. One of the issues are we know it's associated with obesity. We now know that 8% of adult, if you look at a typical adult calorie intake in America, 8 to 10% of that comes from high fructose corn syrup. And in children, it's approaching 20%. And whether or not that's more addictive than sucrose, I think, is open to discussion. At first, I thought it was poo-poo. All sugar is the same. I don't believe that anymore. I think that high fructose corn syrup is probably a little bit more addictive than other things, probably just because it's cheap and available, but who knows? Anyway, now, what about the phosphorus in it that people talk about? Does it really remove calcium from the bones? Does it really destroy teeth? The answer is no. It doesn't destroy teeth unless you drink Gatorade, you know, bong it just before you go to sleep at night so the sugar's on your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
We know that sugar on your teeth just before you go to sleep isn't good, which is why we brush our teeth before we go to sleep to get rid of that residue. It's not just to get rid of the tartar when you get older, but it's really to get rid of the, sort of the sugary film and the bacteria that are associated with it. So does he brush his teeth twice a day?
Yes, I believe he does, yes.
Well, you believe you're his girlfriend. You should know if he brushes his teeth.
Does he have a toothbrush
at his house when he stays overnight? I mean, that's how you can tell.
Yeah, no, he has his own toothbrush here. Yeah, we don't live together, but he does have a toothbrush here.
So that's kind of an important issue. I think the other issue is sort of a health issue. I mean, 164 ounces or 128 ounces of Gatorade, you know, which is a gallon, half a gallon of Gatorade, it's just a lot. And, you know, so it's a lot of junk to go into your body. So I tell people, look, you may not get rid of the junk. Get rid of the calories. Do it with diet or like he does, half. Okay, so he's cut down by the calories in half, seriously, or a quarter. And think about not just doing Gatorade, but doing something else that may be a little more healthful with no calories, such as, you know, such as a soda water, which is club soda with a twist. Now, you may not like it as much at first, but in fact, we in America have habituated ourselves to a sweeter and sweeter diet. Mm-hmm. We eat a lot more sweets than we did 20 years ago. You know, I'd recommend that he try to change his habits. He gained 10 pounds since the desk job. If he's not careful, it'll be 10 pounds a year, you know, based on what you do. And that's what people gain. They gain weight, you know, 5 to 10 pounds a year. And before you know it, they're over the top. So,
well, thank you so much.
Yep, thank you so much for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Speaking of drinks, Zorba, let's help out Jim now from Rockwood, Missouri. Jim sent a note to the Zorba Pastor on your health inbox, and Jim would also like to find out more on his drink of choice. He writes, I was trying to drink one can of low-sodium V8 a day, and I did, but was not too excited about it. Then I discovered the V8 fusion, and it was love at first taste. What is the verdict on V8 Fusion? My kids won't drink the regular V8, but they love the Fusion. My wife says it's too much sugar. Is this good for kids?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, V8 happens to have a lot of sodium. That's the issue with V8. We get too much sodium. And if you try a low-sodium V8, it doesn't taste very good. I mean, I've tasted it.
Oh, it tastes awful.
Yeah, if I'm going to have V8, I'm going to have less V8, but I'm going to have it with sodium because it's not with sodium. It's with salt.
Yeah.
And it tastes good, but I'll have less of it. I think the importance here is reading the label. And the important things about label with drinks is they can be very confusing. You have to multiply the number of calories per serving by the serving, because most people drink the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at a typical bottle, like a Coca-Cola bottle, which will say 20 ounces, it'll say, I believe, it's either 2 or 2.5 servings. So you look at the calories per serving, you go, oh, it's only 130 calories. And then you realize, no, the bottle is 450 calories.
And you may drink a bottle of it. Yeah.
So you've got to do that. It's the same with potato chips. If they do a serving of chips, guess how many chips are in a serving?
I think I've heard you say
six.
Half a dozen.
Six chips in a serving. It should be half a bag, quarter of a bag, whole bag, because how people eat them. So with this drug, V8 Fusion, if his wife says there's too much sugar, read that label.
Yeah.
As I said, if you look at kids especially, it's approaching 20% of their calories are coming from high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
And no matter how sweet it is, if you're getting your vegetables or your fruits and it's sweetened with corn syrup or it's sweetened with sucrose, beware. We don't need those calories.
I just got off a plane in time for the show, as you know, Zorba, and I had a sandwich with chips. Those chips really were one serving.
That's right. The chips on an airplane are one serving. You got it, Tom.
Want Zorba to fuse your lifestyle questions? Then send them to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more coming up here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. An interesting topic to talk over. Lots more of your calls and our medical myth buster. Right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming, but before that, something I think interesting to talk about. We've mentioned it before. Our Congress has been mulling it for a while, and Zorba, that's taxing soda, maybe pizza, to cut obesity.
Fascinating concept. And if we look at the soda concept and if we look at the calories from soda, pizza, quite a few calories, but soda, that's where the bang for the buck is. If we look at kids and soda, teenagers typically get about between 13, 14, 15% of their calories from soda, you know, from high fructose corn syrup. And if we look at adults, it's about 8 to 10% of their calories. If you stop drinking soda, you drop weight.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a no-brainer with that.
And this research shows that an 18% tax hike could cause adults to lose 5 pounds.
Right, right. Increased the tax on the soda. There's a recommendation. It's like a penny an ounce. But a penny an ounce turns out to be quite a lot when you're buying a 6-pack or a 12-pack of soda. I mean, it sounds like a small amount, but you look at the total price and it adds up to something. There are a number of states that now tax soda. Why? They're looking for revenue.
Sure.
They're not really looking at health. But if we look globally at the health, that might be the issue. I think it's a fascinating concept. You know, when we tax cigarettes, people start to cut down on cigarettes. If we tax soda, they may cut it down. The issue is not just the soda. The issue is the farm subsidies. It's very complex. We give farm subsidies to grow more corn. The corn turns into high fructose corn syrup, and the high fructose corn syrup turns into soda, and then we become obese. So it's a little bit more complex than just the tax, because we tax on one hand and give tax relief on the other
hand. So the politics is messy on this thing, but what about the science, Zorba, on how many pounds we will lose?
Well, Well, the science...
They're guessing
what,
how much soda we what, wouldn't buy.
I'll tell you what the science shows. The science shows when food becomes cheaper, people become fatter. That's the science. And so the concept of taxing some food, which tends to lead to obesity, is kind of a, I mean, I find it a fascinating concept. The issue, I think, the real bang for our buck is with our children in schools. I think soda should be completely removed from schools. There is no reason to have soda in any school in the country,
yeah,
and that's an issue.
I read just recently that a lot of schools, quite a few schools, are throwing soda out of the
schools. Exactly. And I think that's really where the issue is. The issue of taxing it, well, we tax cigarettes, and basically we've cut down on cigarettes, so you can think of that. But I think it just raises public awareness. I mean, I'm not necessarily pro for this as a tax, but the idea, people don't realize how many calories they're getting from soda. They don't realize how much weight they're getting from soda. They don't realize if they stop soda, they may begin to lose weight. They think of soda as something that's okay to drink. Soda is an empty calorie. You don't need it. And the less soda we drink, the better off we'll be.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Charlottesville, Virginia. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
I don't know what to call myself, really. I smoke cigarettes, but I roll my own cigarettes, and I roll less than the amount of a regular cigarette. And I do that for economic reasons, and I tend to only, I figured it out the other day, I only smoke about one a day because I'll smoke half the cigarette and I'll put it out, and then later on in the day I'll roll myself a whole other cigarette and then only smoke about half of it and put it out. So it's very uneconomical in the end. But I just want to know if, you know, this is really that bad.
Now, you sound like you're about 17 years old and you're rolling cigarettes. I think of that as an old guy thing.
Well, I think that's a really great compliment in a way because I'm 28 years old and I'm a graduate student. So I love that fact.
Uh-huh.
I started rolling cigarettes because I'm a poor graduate student and so I don't want to pay. It's a lot cheaper to get papers and tobacco than to go and buy a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
and then also have people bumming cigarettes from you. Nobody wants to roll their own. So.
Well, Zorba's about to slap you on the wrist on this one, but before he does, let me tell you that my Uncle Dudley rolled his own cigarettes for probably 85 years mm-hmm. before he died at the age of 92.
Uh-huh.
So,
wow.
Zorba, take that.
Yeah, take that. You know, whenever people talk about Uncle Dudley's, they're always the exception to the rule, and we know there are always exceptions to the rule. And not everyone who smokes cigarettes actually dies from, you know, most people smoke cigarettes, never get cancer, but a lot of people die prematurely, and Dudley obviously had good genes. First of all, it is economically better to roll your cigarettes because mm-hmm. you don't have the cigarette tax. It's the tax on tobacco and tax on that. But there were a couple of articles that I recently read about cigarette smokers and how many people are actually, essentially smoking 1 to 3 cigarettes a day, which is where you fit in.
Right, and I've never heard anything about it, so I'm really curious.
Well, the reality is the data seems to show, first of all, it's carbon monoxide that's in the cigarette. It's not just the tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the tar and the nicotine. It's the carbon monoxide level in your body. And we now know that somebody to not have any risk from cigarettes has to be a non-smoker, which WHO is now defined as less than 100 cigarettes in a lifetime. In other words, that's a non-smoker. So a non-smoker has had less than 100 cigarettes in a lifetime. Why? Because we know that once you cross that threshold, you begin to incrementally increase your risk. So what's the issue? Well, obviously, a 2-pack-a-day smoker is going to have a lot less risk than a 2-cigarette-a-day smoker. But your question is a 2-cigarette-a-day smoker at no risk? And the answer is no. You're still at risk. Now, it's a small risk, and I can't quantitate it. It's not as big as 2 packs a day. We know that for sure. On the other hand, it's a risk that's there. So is it safe? No, it's not safe. So what do you do about it? Well, the issues are kind of multiple. The issues are, you know, are 2 packs, you know, 2 cigarettes a day going to become 3 or 4? We know that if you have cigarettes on a regular basis, you have carbon monoxide in your bloodstream. If you go out and go, I'm going to get a life insurance policy, they take a blood test, and they can tell, and you say I'm a non-smoker, they can tell because they can tell the carbon monoxide in your bloodstream. It's low level, less than a 2-pack-a-day smoker, but it's still there.
Well, I haven't had any for 2 weeks because I'm poor, so It's not at that threshold yet. So, you know, maybe you guys won one for my grandma.
Yeah.
I've had to figure that out.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Say hi to your grandma.
And we certainly appreciate the call. Zorba, time once again for our medical myth buster now. Today's myth deals with body temperature. Now, it's long been thought and sometimes mocked that as we age, our body temp declines. Is this true?
Absolutely correct. Your
really?
Body temp declines, not by much, but about every decade, every 10 years or so, your body temp declines. You know, we think of 98.6 as the temperature. There's some people think it's actually 98.6 at 98.2. If you do an overall average, it'll be their children tend to have higher average body temperatures as you get older. One of the issues that it's not exactly part of the myth, but older people often appear to have lower body temperatures because when they hold the thermometer in their mouth, they don't hold it tight enough with the tongue underneath. And often they don't have that same closure of their lips, and especially if they've lost some teeth in there, so they appear to be much lower than they really are.
Why are you looking at me?
No, you're a young guy, Tom. But yeah, they do. It's about probably a quarter of a point every decade or so. But you know, get to be in your 70s and 80s, that can be a degree or 2 degrees less. Now the point really is that if you're 80 years of age and your body and you take your temperature and it's 99, that might be 2 degrees higher for you, and that might be a kid who's 98.6 being 101.6.
Right, so that's more of a concern.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, in other words, you can't depend just on temperature in older people to find out whether they have an infection. Kids, really, temperature really helps you a lot. Older people, not as much. So the answer is body temperature does decline with age, but intelligence increases with age. And that's the good news.
Research on that coming up.
Coming up. There we go.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust. Send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I recently started working out again, and I have been taking doing energy drinks and power bars. So I've been contemplating, actually, how safe are they, and should I be really doing that?
Well, let's look at power bars. Power bars are fat and carbohydrate. Now, they say they're high protein because often they have a lot of peanuts, and peanuts are protein. You know, so I looked at a power bar the other day. I was doing some exercise, and a friend of mine said, "Oh, try this power bar." And I read it and said 20% of my calories, or rather 20% of the protein for the day would be from this power bar. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. Then I looked at the calories, and I thought, you know what? This is a candy bar that has more peanuts in it. That's what it is. I mean, if you want a candy bar, for me, get a Snickers. Why do I want a power bar? I tried this power bar, and I thought, this is kind of cardboard, and if I want peanuts, I'll eat peanuts. Peanuts are good. So, I mean, you may want to have a power bar, but realize you're having candy. It's okay. It's protein-fortified candy, and sometimes they put a little soy in there to boost the protein a little bit more. So you have any candy bar, that's okay. Nothing wrong with
candy bar. What about the Gatorade type stuff?
Well, no, he's talking about power drinks. You're talking about something like Red Bull. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, right, like Red Bull, or like right now I'm looking at a Rockstar sugar-free energy drink.
Okay, so...
Well, before you, what's the difference between that and Gatorade?
Well, Gatorade is not the same thing. Gatorade is basically soda with potassium. That's what Gatorade is, period.
All right.
Soda with potassium may have a few more calories, a few less, and the potassium replaces some of the potassium we lose, and it's called Gatorade.
And this is different than the Red Bull?
Totally. Not at all. These are smaller drinks that are fortified with caffeine. Well, I love caffeine. Caffeine for me is vitamin C, you know, but I get it under coffee. There's nothing wrong with Red Bull. I happen to like the taste of Red Bull myself. My wife thinks it's yucky. And if it's sugar-free, they often will use, if they're going to sweeten it, they'll use something like Splenda or NutraSweet or something else to actually sweeten it. And I think power drinks are okay in moderation, just like coffee. You've got to look and see how you're doing it. I a little worry about it with kids because they may have 3 or 4 Red Bulls, and so basically they're getting a lot of caffeine, and they may not be able to concentrate as well and have trouble in school. I see nothing wrong with the power drinks. In fact, I think the power drinks are safer than the energy bars because they're not associated with obesity.
Excellent. Excellent. I like those. I like taking those, and they really help out whenever you're really tired, you know.
Of course, of course.
You know, they make a big difference.
They do. I mean, for me, you know, it's the energy drinks are fine. I drink my energy drink. I call it Java, J-A-V-A, and I brew it myself. So thank you so much for your call.
Well, thank you.
Before we get out of here for the week, Zorba, you better grab your gavel because it's time once again for Judge Zorba. Now, today's case comes to us from Johnny, who is both the defendant and the prosecutor.
Oh, easy.
We'll
easy.
Let him explain. He writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, while listening to your show recently, you stated that microwaving a kitchen sponge for 2 minutes on high would kill 99% of the germs on it. All well and fine. My question for you is, if microwaving kills 99% of the germs in the kitchen sponge, what is it doing to the food that we cook and or warm in the microwave oven in terms of destroying or not all enzymes, good bacteria, and vitamins? I have an ongoing argument in my mind as to whether or not using the microwave is healthy. I've read support for both sides of this argument and would love to have it clarified once and for all.
Well, first of all, you know, the sponge thing, obviously you get rid of germs when you heat things up. Whenever you heat up food, I don't care if it's microwave with a torch on the barbecue, on the Barbie, or whether or not you do it on the top of the stove or in the oven, it's going to do the same thing. It heats things up, and what happens? Not only does it destroy germs that are in there, like salmonella if you're cooking chicken, but it also destroys some vitamins, doesn't destroy the minerals. It does destroy the vitamins. It does destroy some enzymes. That's why there's a raw food movement to basically say we should eat more raw food. But the fact is, microwaving is no different than other forms of heat. Heat is heat, and it has an effect. Now, it destroys germs, which is why it tends to sanitize food, and we don't eat raw chicken. So some things have to be microwaved. But when you're talking about veggies, you'll get more vitamins in veggies if you don't cook them. But some of us like to have cooked vegetables in soup, for instance. So heating by any method is generally going to be the same. Microwave is not safer or different than any other method. It's how you heat it and how dangerous the food is.
Want to add your case to the Judge Zorba docket? Send your affidavit or email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Heckle and Jekyll, otherwise known as Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, are the usual birds behind the glass. But Jekyll is off this week, so Aubrey Ralph has filled in for us. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0305Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.